joining me. I'm Kimberly Rogers, and you're listening to the Torah portion called Emor for Shabbat from sundown to sundown, May 6th and 7th. This message is brought to you by themessianicmessage.com. I hope that you enjoy this teaching. Emor, it's Leviticus 21:1 to 24:23. The Haftarah is Ezekiel 44, verses 15 to 31, and the Brit HaDashah is 1 Peter 2, verses 4 to 10. I've titled this, The Protocol of the Priest, Divorce, and the Mark of the Beast. Did you know that the priestly protocol, divorce, and the mark of the beast are all connected? In this Torah portion, we can plainly see the role of Yeshua being laid out as high priest, but also in this Torah portion is the explanation of why divorce is so deadly, and also why these are so closely tied with the book of Revelation, specifically with the mark of the beast. The protocol in Emor is specific to the priesthood and prophetic of Yeshua's role as high priest. It also relates to him being the husband of the children of Israel back there during Moses' time, and is prophetic of him being our husband again. Yes, again. In a little while you'll see why I say that. In order to understand how the three parts of this teaching relate to each other, let's start at the beginning with the protocol of the high priest. Here's the instruction, Leviticus 21, starting in verse 1. And the Lord said to Moses, Speak to the priests, the sons of Aaron, and say to them, No one shall make himself unclean for the dead among his people, except for his closest relatives, his mother, his father, his son, his daughter, his brother, or his virgin sister, who is near to him because she's had no husband. For her he may make himself unclean. You know, this instruction is different for a non-priest. In Numbers 19:11, and I realize we haven't reached that far in our Torah portions yet, but let's just jump over there to Numbers 19:11. It says, Whoever touches the dead body of any person shall be unclean 7 days. So, this instruction is different for a non-priest than for a priest. So I can touch my friend, my grandparent, my aunt or uncle's dead body, but a priest cannot. Why is this? Well, because the priest is a husband. Now right here is a little mini teaching about how husbands are to conduct themselves in their family matters. But it's also protocol for the priesthood, and it is also a prophecy all rolled into one tiny little verse. And here's the verse, Leviticus 21, verse 4. It says in the English Standard Version, He shall not make himself unclean as a husband among his people and so profane himself. The King James says, But he shall not defile himself, being a chief man among his people, to profane himself. Now we're going to look at the word for husband and the word for chief man. Now, that word is the same in both translations, and guess what? That word for husband is Baal. The word for chief man is Baal. It's Strong's 1167. Now I know that you have heard that word before. It is translated into English as Lord. Now there's a teaching that says calling Yeshua Lord means you're calling him a pagan deity and that you're calling on a pagan deity. Well, actually, it's the other way around. You see, pagans have usurped the Messiah's title that comes to him in this Torah portion. Why do I say that they have usurped the Messiah's title? Well, who is our priest? Yeshua. Who is our husband? Our Baal. Yeshua. From the beginning, it was intended that he should be our Baal, our husband. Well, it is now that this ties in with divorce, because it is in this Torah portion that we learn the reason why that Yeshua had to come and die in order to bring salvation to us, so that he could be our husband, our Baal. Let me explain. The children of Israel were married to Yeshua at Mount Sinai. That constituted the first marriage. Then later there was a divorce, and I'll talk about that later on. In the future, Yeshua is coming to get married a second time. At that time, he will once again be called Baal, husband. And actually, we can rightfully call him Baal right now, because when we are born again, we agree individually, not as a nation like they did back there at Mount Sinai, but we do this individually. We agree to obey. Now, do you remember those vows that women take that says you will honor and obey? Well, that harks back to the Torah being given at Mount Sinai, when the Lord said, if you will do this, and the people said, oh yes, we will, even before they knew what they were supposed to do. Well, today people are out of touch with that word. Obey what, they say? Well, our first obedience is to the Torah. So, when we are betrothed to Yeshua individually, as we are right now, we render our obedience to his Torah. Now, being betrothed to him makes him our husband, our Baal, even though the marriage has not yet been consummated. Betrothal in Scripture is legal marriage without sexual relations. So, do you see what happens when pagans steal and twist what God has given to us, and we allow them to take what God has given to us? We need to stop letting them take away our heritage. He is our husband. He is our Baal. Now, there is more instruction for the priest. In verse 5, it says, they shall not make bald patches on their heads, nor shave off the edges of their beards, nor make any cuts on their bodies. Now, you see, this is what pagans do, or did, and some of them still do, when someone dies. They deface themselves. They blemish themselves. You see, defacing oneself means to give oneself a blemish. And a blemish renders one unfit for tabernacle or temple service. In verse 6 it says, they shall be holy to their God and not profane the name of their God, for they offer the Lord's food offerings, the bread of their Lord. Therefore they shall be holy. Handling the Lord's food is important. It's important work. You know, husbands want their wife's hands to be clean when cooking. You know, her hands are to be set apart for the task of taking care of the food. Well, it's the same with the Lord's offerings, the food offerings. Okay, in verse 7 says, "And they shall not marry a prostitute or a woman who has been defiled, neither shall they marry a woman divorced from her husband, for the priest is holy to his God." You see, everything that the priest gets is supposed to be set apart for the priest. The woman is supposed to be set apart for him, because God's bride is to be set apart for him, and you'll see how that relates to this in a minute. So now let's look further into verse 7. It says, "Neither shall they marry a woman divorced from her husband." You see, right here is the reason that Yeshua had to die in order to save us. You see, Torah says that a priest cannot marry a divorced woman, and he did divorce her. Not only that, but when Yeshua walked through what we call the covenant of the pieces, when he made the covenant with Abraham, he was saying that he would take the death sentence if he didn't keep his end of the covenant, and he would take the death sentence if any of Abraham's descendants didn't keep their end of it. So he literally gave himself a death sentence in both cases, in the case of divorce and in the case of the covenant. Let's go to Jeremiah 31 and look at verses 31 and 32. "Behold, the days are coming, declares the Lord, when I will make a new covenant with the house of Israel and the house of Judah, not like the covenant that I made with their fathers on the day when I took them by the hand to bring them out of the land of Egypt, my covenant that they broke, though I was their husband, declares the Lord." You see, he was their husband, but he divorced them. He says, "though I was their husband." Now, I don't have time to go into all of the teaching about the divorce of the nation of Israel from God, but Eddie Chumney does a wonderful teaching on this, and I suggest that you go over there to his website, which I believe is HebraicHeritage.com or .org, something like that. Just Google it, and you'll find it, and read that. It really spells it out for you how this divorce occurred. The important thing in this Torah portion, though, is that we need to understand, first of all, that Yeshua did not desert his people, even though he divorced them. Scripture says all through it that he did not desert his people. But it does say that he turned his face away from them for a short time. However, because of the love that he had for them, he turned his face back toward them. But in order to save his people and build his kingdom, he had to come to die to bring them to him individually this time, instead of as a nation. You see, unlike at Mount Sinai, when it was the nation that married him, now it is individuals that marry him. And we go back, as it were, individually to Mount Sinai to take our vow of obedience to Torah. The reason this is so important to understand for these end times is because we're getting ready to have to make a choice. We'll have to decide whether to stay with Yeshua and possibly suffer death, or take the mark of the beast, which will result in death anyway, but that's the choices we're going to be faced with. So you might not realize that the mark of the beast is all tied up with this priestly protocol and the prohibition against the priest marrying a divorcee, because perhaps you don't understand what the book of Revelation is about and who it is written to. We have to get to that. Revelation is written to the Hebrew bondservants. It is not written to Gentiles. So everything in there applies to the Hebrews, bondservants or descendants of Abraham, not to those who do not know Abraham's God. So when Revelation talks about the mark of the beast, it is talking about this divorce situation and the fact that Torah says a priest can't marry a divorcee. You see, what that means for you is if you take this mark, you have divorced yourself from Yeshua on the spot. And because he is not coming back to die again, you cannot return to him. You cannot remarry him if you change your mind. That's why there is no forgiveness for taking the mark of the beast. That's why so many believers teach that divorce is an unforgivable sin, even though they don't really understand the reason why. Well, it is only unforgivable in this situation with the mark of the beast, because that's when the soul divorces the husband. You know, divorce happens in the flesh and is forgivable because a divorce between a husband and wife does not sever the relationship with Messiah. You know, he doesn't want us to divorce from each other. In Matthew 19:8, he said, "Because of your hardness of heart, Moses allowed you to divorce your wives, but from the beginning it was not so." In other words, Torah makes a way for divorce to happen, but with the stipulation about it, like that a priest can't marry a divorced woman. Once she's been defiled by someone else, she can never be part of the priest's bride. She can't become part of his bride. In the case of a believer that takes the mark, there is defilement with Hasatan. In actuality, taking the mark of the beast means that you have married Hasatan. You have divorced Yeshua and married Hasatan. So the priestly protocol of divorce turns into a prophecy at the end that has to do with the mark of the beast. I hope that you enjoyed this teaching. Shabbat Shalom.